Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic, please call. K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. Alrighty. Nothing heard, that's a good thing. And let me see. Lower some volume here. Alrighty. Welcome, everybody. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is open to all radio amateurs who are licensed to operate in a 2-meter band. It's a different kind of net than the one you're used to. This net is a conversation. It's a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computers, emergency management, I guess, any number of things in our life that depends on things with electrons rolling through it, pretty much you can talk about. So, we also check in a little differently to this net. We do it by call sign groups, and you'll hear your call sign group and call in at that time. And we sign in or check in to the net with your call sign, your name, and you indicate whether or not you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. So, with no further ado, let's see how we're doing with the Alpha stations. Any stations whose call sign begins with the letter A, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, very good. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter Kilo 2.
K2BAR. This is K2ZO. No comments or questions at this time.
Okay, Jim. Good evening to you. Alrighty, I accidentally closed my email file. That's not good. So much for maintaining a log. Alrighty. Any other Kilo 2s? Alrighty. Any other kilos?
This is KC2SQV. Good evening. No comments, questions at this time.
Okay, I have KC2SQV. Hello, James. And I got yours squared away. Who is the other kilo? Who checked in? Who's the station to double with James? Okay, any other
kilo? KO2OK, Bennett. No questions at the moment.
Okay, Bennett, good evening. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos? All right. No questions or comments. Whoops, who was that?
KC2ZMA, Marco. No questions or comments.
Okay, Marco, very good. Sorry about that. We doubled. Good hearing you. And by the way, nice meeting you last weekend. Alrighty. Any other kilos? Okie dokie. Well then, let's move on to the whiskey station. Any stations called in the English whiskey?
W2JEK, Don. No questions, no comments.
Okay, very good, Don. Welcome aboard. A lot of check-ins and no questions or comments. That's going to make for an interesting net. Need to work on that, boys. All right. Actually, I have a question for the net, so based on something that Steve Holly sent me. So, very good. All right. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Okay, Charlie, very fine, thank you. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys? Okay, anybody whose call sign begins with November?
KPAR?
Okay, I have
about a Heat SD630, a relaxation timer.
A relaxation oscillator timer. Okay, very good, Noel. So we'll get to you in a moment. And who was the other station? Okay, any other stations for the night?
Control, this is K2AMI. Sorry, I missed the call up. Tony, just some comments, perhaps, that's all.
Very good, Tony. We'll start with your comments in a moment. Who else? All righty. Tony, your comments will go first. And then we'll get some more check-ins, and we'll go to Noel's questions, and then we'll go to whatever questions and comments there are after that. So, K2AMI, K2BAR, and we'll get TCDC.
Good evening, all. I don't know who's in here. I kind of joined it late. I'm sorry. Getting like Gordon. Not on time anymore. Anyway, I know that the Fairlawn Amateur Radio Club will be doing a contact with an Ares, the ISS, the International Space Station, very soon, and I've been kind of getting interested in that, and I just want to encourage anybody to find out that it's not too difficult to listen to the space station. If you go to the AMSAT website, and I think you go to passes, and you type in the ISS, and you type in your grid square, and they'll tell you what time of day. Of course, it's universal time, UST, what is it? Yeah, all right. It's Zulu time, okay, universal time, they tell you that. And because some of the passes are very high, they're like 80 degrees, 70 degrees high, you can actually hear them on your handy-talkie. The downlink, when they are transmitting, is on 145.8 FM downlink. There are uplinks, too, of course. You'd have to do a little more research and find out what they're doing when. But I encourage everybody to take a look at that again. It's been a while since I've been back on satellites. And what happened the other night was that over at Kidnight, Gordon, at about 6:45, just as I got there, everybody was running out of the Kidnight. And they said, the satellite. And somebody had data on the actual pass of the space station in the northwestern sky. It was near the moon, and it was a beautiful sight to see the two things. We could see the space shuttle, I think it's called the Discovery, which is the last flight of Discovery, ahead of the space station, and one following the other, a good fair distance, but not out of eyesight between the two of them. And it was quite impressive to see it fly by. Now, that got me triggered up again into thinking about looking at satellites again. So that's my comments.
Yeah, it's pretty delightful. I've seen the shuttle, and I've seen the space station in the sky, but never with a radio in my hand. I do remember the first, SARAC, Shuttle Amateur Radio Experiment, before there was a space station. And when Owen Garriott went over, I literally sat there with a 2AT, sitting on the roof of my Dodge Colt, which is a Mitsubishi subcompact hatchback thingy. And that was kind of neat, middle of the day. And people were walking up to me outside of work, "What are you doing?" I said, "Listening to the shuttle." I went, "Really?" And they heard Owen Garriott's voice come through talking to somebody. It's like, wow, it's cool. So, anyway, got some attention. Those are the days when people at work would bring in TVs so they could watch the shuttle flight. Now people don't even pay attention when the shuttle's up or down. Kind of sad, but anyway. Alrighty. Anybody else? Okay, so Tony, what was the radio and antenna configuration?
My configuration? Of course, I happen to have azimuth elevation and elevation rotators on a set of beams. but I'm sure I can copy it with a handy talkie on 145.800 on the downlink, because it's line of sight. You know, they're only 200 miles up, and you get there's nobody in between when they're overhead. Of course, if their elevation is only 10 degrees off the horizon, you're not going to do very well with that. But when they get to be over 40 degrees off the horizon and approaching 90 degrees off the horizon, you can do very well with the handy talkie. Back to that.
Yeah, that's a good point. You don't need much. But the other night, what did people use?
You know, nobody had equipment listening. We only used our eyeball on the thing. We could physically see it. If you could think back to Tuesday night, it was a very clear night. There was a very nice moon out. It wasn't a full moon. And in the same direction that the moon was that night was the same position where we first spotted the space station and the shuttle. And it flew over, you know, essentially probably at about a 60-degree angle over the high school up at Westwood.
Well, that's neat. Anybody have any questions for Tony? That's excellent. That's excellent. Okay. I'm sure one of, you know, the arrow antennas or the cheap Yagis that Steve Hawley's used to building are always attractive. That's great. Well, thank you, Tony. Okay, before we continue with Noel's question, do we have any more check-ins for the Bergen Amateur Association Technical Net? Okie dokie. Noel and Joel, your questions, sir.
Oh, I recently accidentally got a SB630 station monitor, and one of the things that it has is a 10-minute ID timer. And when I'm reading the brief description, it appears that it's using a tube, a capacitor, and a resistor to somehow make a timing circuit that you can adjust from plus or minus 10 minutes. Set it for 9 minutes if you want, somebody said. How do you make a timing circuit with a tube, a resistor, and a capacitor?
Okay, so let's think about this. The first thing you want to think about is that the number 1 divided by, let's see, I'm trying to remember. Okay, so it's tau. All right, so Jim, correct me if I'm wrong here, but basically a capacitor will discharge through, what, 66%, roughly speaking. I'm trying to remember E. I'm trying to remember now. But basically, if you multiply the resistance times the capacitance, you'll come up with a value in seconds. And usually about 5 times that will fully discharge the capacitor. Is that right? Help me out here, Jim. K2ZO, K2BAR.
Yeah, that's about right. I'm not sure what kind of a timing circuit it has, though. It may be, I guess it's doing is charging the capacitor, and then, it's timing down, so you probably have a good quality capacitor, and then it's charging, and then discharging, discharging.
Right, so my guess is that the resistance of that resistor network, whatever it is, discharging the capacitor will give you roughly 1/5, 1/6 of total, you know, discharge. Now, where the threshold is, where the tube will hopefully has a high impedance input, trigger the output. Well, that's a different matter. And then, so you can also use it in reverse, charging the capacitor up will then cause it to conduct. That would change the impedance. I mean, it's hard to say without the circuit. There's a couple of different ways to do it, but basically, you're building yourself a loop of charging capacitor, either discharging it through the resistor or regulating the rate of charge of the capacitor to reach a threshold. So you can do it on the right, way up or the way down, if you will. So what's the circuit look like, Noel?
My guess is it's a relaxation oscillator.
Read it good enough. I can send it to you.
Well, why don't you send it to me and anybody else who would like it? I guess K2ZO, are you in front of the computer too? Anybody else? SQV, well, you can send it to me also, Mr. James. Anybody else want it? Okay, we'll send it to us and we'll take a look at it. It's very good, but Jim, refresh my memory how a relaxation oscillator works.
Well, it depends on what you're doing. You usually use a unijunction transistor or something like that, but you know, this is a tube type circuit, so we're going to have to think about tubes. But basically, it's a slow oscillator. Okay, think of a relaxation oscillator as a slow oscillator, and the thing can be so slow you can have an event that occurs over a period of minutes by choosing the right time constant. So basically, that's how you do that. You charge, discharge, change state, give an alarm. I'll bet you that's the way that circuit works.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is that there's a point on the transistor, or in this case the tube, that when a certain charge state is reached, that it's rapidly discharged or starts to recharge, as the case may be, and triggers an impedance change. Basically, when there's voltage of a certain potential, the tube starts to conduct, thereby draining off the capacitor rather quickly. And then once the voltage falls, it starts to recharge at the behest, or if you will, the rate governed by the capacitor and resistor value. Because at that point, the tube or transistor are probably high impedance at that point. That would be my guess.
Most of them, as I remember, and this is going way back, the simple circuits used a neon tube in a relaxation oscillator circuit that would periodically flash. So then, of course, you can trigger that into another one and then count down, which is perhaps what they do. Don't know. It's so easy to do it with a 955. Any 555, sorry. Becky.
And even better if you want to cascade it with a 556, right? All right. Very good. Anybody else have any comments for Noel?
I sent to you.
What's that, Noel?
I sent the schematic to you, to William.
Most excellent. Take a look. All right. Well, I will take a look at this. There are other comments. Alrighty. Doc just came in, Noel. And who am I sending this to? It right now is in K2ZO's mailbox, Tony's mailbox, and Don's mailbox. Anybody else want this other than James? Okie doke. Well, I'm going to take a look at it and see what we got. Basically, Oh, my. Oh, where is the oscillator? I see. Okay, so they have a OA2 as a voltage regulator providing a stable reference on a pentode. And, yeah, there's, just like I said, I could have called it. That's pretty good. All right, so, and there's a neon lamp, too, Jim, in the circuit. Are you happy about that?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yep, that's the classic relaxation oscillator that's in every school textbook. Well, used to be. Yes, what it's doing, and of course the tube is nothing more than a relay that's just being driven there. It's integrating those pulses here and pumping it into the tube. How about that? So with the timer is a neon lamp and that capacitor associated with it. Interesting.
Right, but look at the resistor and capacitor on the screen grid coming off of the diode. And so it looks to me that capacitor, which I can't read, I have to probably zoom it up a bit, but the capacitor on pin 1 looks to me like it might be the timer. Oh no, it's not. It's a little tiny weeny thing. I guess it's C23 and C24 that are governing that.
Yeah, because they're paralleled up there. You see that to get the big capacitor. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, the one on the screen is just a bypass to keep RF out of there.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it might be using it to essentially act as a shunt to ground when it hits a certain voltage. And it does do that, and that's why that diode's there and the neon lamp, etc. That's very nice. So, what is your next question, Mr. Noel, about this circuit?
I was just trying to figure out how it works. It looks so interesting. Now I got to repair the digital clock. Boy, that's going to be fun. It's digital. See, it's got these wheels with digits on them, and the wheels spin, so it's digital.
Oh, boy. What's that song? Let's go around in circles. Okay. I think a little Billy Preston in that music. All right, so the voltage from the OA2 is isolated through a whole lot of megohms of resistance. Wow. 144 megohms of resistance to feed a bus that's going into the neon lamp. And let's see. I guess when it energizes, when does it energize? I guess it energizes when it hits a certain voltage, and then it drains off in a big hurry through that 1K resistor on R28, right?
Yeah, it looks that way, and then it drives the relay. The thing that happens is the relay pulls in, but it wants to be high impedance. And if you take a look at the reset, look where the reset line goes, and you can see that just shunts everything and takes it all off that tube. So, interesting. Have fun with the digital clock, Noel.
All right, so let's review something here, Jim, just for everybody's benefit. The 5EW8 or whatever it is, I can't even read that number. The relay controls tube on the left side of the timer circuit. When it reaches a point that the voltage on the plate is a certain voltage, it pulls in the relay, and then it all starts to discharge really, really fast. That's interesting. So, that's pretty cool. All right. My guess is I'll probably have to walk at least one or two other people through the circuit at some point. But very cool. Very cool. The other benefit of this is that you can do the same thing with an integrated circuit. You can also do this with a couple of transistors.
Well, you could update this thing with an NE555, put a timer, actually a 556, cascade them. Look up the application sheet, Noel. And as far as the digital readout, I would take that out, and I would go on the Internet, and I would buy a small digital display, like the one that's in your automobile. There's people that sell them for $5, and put it in there, and modify the power supply, especially the filament voltage, that was used for the relay tube to drive that. Be an interesting kit night project.
Why can't I take a dollar store digital clock and toss it in there, and it runs off the battery for 2 years? Call it good enough. And tool you.
Yeah, and pull the transistors out of their sockets. I mean the tube. Actually, I like Jim's idea. I think the clever way to do this, though, would be to integrate everything into the tube sockets so that you can restore the tubes and everything will work as normal.
Yeah.
Tony, can you take over the net? I got something I got to take care of immediately.
I guess I can. I was just involved with a project, but I'm paying a little bit of attention. I don't know, I didn't run any check-ins, but don't know who, if Noel has got any more comments about his station monitor, or any other of the many pieces of equipment he purchased from the auction on Sunday. Noel, would you like to comment on anything else there?
Well, I got to work on the 259, the MSJ-259, but I've just been crazy busy. I had to go for a pulmonary function test this morning. Yesterday I had to go to New York and get my ears tuned up. That's a trip. They really do it, too, by the way. Oh, this is good for DetectNet. So I go in there to the audiologist, and I said, okay, I have four different digital programs. I think number two is about 6 dB down from the other programs, so let's bring number two up. And let's see, number four program, I got that running about 6 dB hot. I'd like to go up to about another 6 dB to about 12 dB above my normal listening level so I could have super ears. And I want to stay above the noise floor from the tinnitus. And, of course, the audiologist finds it interesting because I'm the only one that ever has communicated her with actual jargon, and she understood it, and she can tell me. And I explained to her about the noise floor on her receiver and how if it's the incoming signal is below the noise floor, you really can't hear it, and how the tinnitus gives me a noise floor. And I also explained to her that my program number two, which is the one suggested by Mr. Jim Joyce, cuts everything below 200 hertz and above 2800 hertz, and it's the greatest thing for like noisy malls or places where there's lots of high frequency sound bouncing off of glass, such as in the Paramus Park Coffee, when we have coffee there. So I'm having fun with my digital signal processor. And 2OEL, back to net.
You've got the signal processor on either side of your head. It's your head that does the final receiving, huh? Very interesting. Okay. And you said you got an MSJ-259, which is the analyzer, the antenna analyzer. And did you put batteries in it, or did you power it with a wall wart? How did you intend to activate it?
Threw in eight of the new NICADs that I had gotten. These are the ones that allegedly will hold a charge and lose about 2% a month, as opposed to the normal NICAD, which loses 10% a week. I threw eight of them in, turned it on, it didn't work. So what I was planning to do is see somebody who happens to have the correct power supply and try it out with the real power supply before I do anything else, because it could be a broken wire from the battery. it's completely dead. Nothing happens when you push the power switch. Could be the power switch. So I'm not going to worry about it until things slow up. As you can guess, life has been reasonably hectic lately. And 2 AM.
Hey, well, I have the Barra MFJ-259 here, which is not the same one you've got, but it's the single 2 meter, or rather, a single lower band frequency device for the antenna analyzer. And I have a power supply for that, so if you want to borrow that power supply and compare it, keep that in mind when you get a chance to do it. Okay. Anybody else with any comments or questions or information for tonight's net?
UJK.
Don, W2JK, Don's got a test session, but anything else, Don?
That's what I would announce, that our test session for this month, the Barra's regular test session, will be on the 18th, which is Friday the 18th. This is a week from tomorrow. We'll be having that at the high school at 7 o'clock. It's our regular test session. Back to net, W2JK.
Don, and bear in mind, the 18th is between St. Patrick's Day on the 17th and St. Joseph's Day, which is on the 19th. And our church is having a get-together. They call it a cabbage and cannoli night. Cabbage and cannoli night, okay? And it's on that weekend, so it should be fun. There's an admission charge, of course, and I think there'll be other entertainment besides cabbages and cannolis. I also see that the local River Edge Diner is advertising that they will have corned beef and cabbage all day on St. Patty's Day. Those people who like to have corned beef and cabbage and don't cook it themselves. I've been to the River Edge Diner for the corned beef and cabbage, and it usually is very good, so I can recommend it. And it's not that expensive. Another comment as we progress here, with all this rain that's coming down, obviously there's going to be some flooding problems. And after flooding problems comes, assessments, damage assessments. Normally the Red Cross can handle most of the damage assessments unless they're overwhelmed, and they might be overwhelmed. So please, guys, charge your batteries. You know, as Bob Jarrett says, get your walkie-talkies up and charged. We might need some volunteers for the Red Cross. I'm afraid that and thinking in terms of when it's going to happen, it may not be Saturday or Sunday or Monday. Peak at some of the river basins will be late Friday afternoon. And then after that, the damage will be done, and then the Red Cross will go in after for damage assessments after that. So keep that in mind, guys. There will be a possible call-up for the Red Cross in the next couple of days after Friday. Anybody else with any information or comments, come now.
KC2ZMA, Marco, with a question.
Good evening, Marco. KC2ZMA, K2AMI, or the K2BARNet. You got a question, come on ahead.
K2BAR, this is KC2ZMA. I'm just reading the Barra bulletin here, and I'm reading a section here where it says U.S. House of Representatives wants to auction off for the broadband first responders, wants to auction off some of the 70 centimeter band on 420 to 440 and 450 to 470 megahertz. And I just, it's kind of upsetting a little bit. They want to like sell that, and hands like us can't use that frequency that they do that. I just want to know if anybody has any, you know, anything to say about this or information. I mean, if you look up a lot of broadband first responders on the internet, and there's so many things flying around, I just want to know if anybody has any comments on this, reading off the Barrett Bulletin. Back to net.
It's a good question, and I get from, you know, I subscribe to the ARRL weekly bulletins, and there's also information on the ARRL bulletin this week. It comes down usually on Thursday night for the weekend. You might want to read up on it, or just go to the ARRL website and read up on it. Many of the frequencies have been sold. You know, we lost part of our 220 megahertz band a few years back, and UPS was the primary collector of that band when it left. They had tracking equipment that they wanted to put on 220 megahertz. I don't know if they're still using it, but they were at that time. And we lost a portion of the 220 megahertz band. So if you don't use it, you lose it. And that's a good point, because like we just did a 440 net at 830 with on 444-100, and we had three check-ins. We really should be activating and using more of these bands so that the FCC knows they are active. Of course, one little club in one little area is not going to make a difference, but if everybody got that same frame of mind to use it, they won't lose it. It might make a difference. And that's why I very much encourage the VHF contest, because on that VHF contest, we use all those high-frequency bands, and many of the high frequencies that are mentioned there, the 420 megahertz band, the 420 megahertz frequency is one of the bands that we're involved with the VHF contest. And again, we use it on the contest, but not too much after that. But the more we can use it, the better it would be. Anybody else with input or comments for Marco or for me?
72JK.
Hey, Don. Yes, go ahead, Don.
And regardless of 440 megahertz, I know a lot of hams have equipment for that band. You know, it's not just that, and a lot of that equipment is not going to be readily, if it's, if it's set up for 440 and you, they give you something else, if they do give you something else, it's not easy to just go in there and run a few wires like you all used to do in the old days with the tube equipment. Now this is all surface mount stuff, and it would be very difficult to re-engineer a, let's say, an ICOM 7000 or a dual band handy talkie or whatever you have that's on these bands. It's not, so it's going to be is you have one band on that dual band handy talkie that just isn't going to be useful anymore. And unfortunately, we have to realize there's a lot of repeaters out there on this frequency, and in addition to the fixed stations and the old stations that are out there. And we have helped a lot of investment in that, so we really should be making comment on that as to our representatives as much as possible. But that's what gets the attention, is the sending these letters into the representatives. Back to that, W2JEK.
I'm very guilty of not doing that myself, and I'm considering myself fairly active on those bands, and I really should do it, but I just never get around to doing it. But if you are interested, Marco, or anybody else interested, please go to the ARL website and find some information about it there. It's got to be there someplace, and it definitely was on the ARL newsletter that came down this weekend. You know, these frequencies that the amateur radio operators use are very valuable. You know, there are loads of other services that would love to use them. They pay for them. And they pay a license fee of some type to the FCC for using them. We get them for nothing. So by all means, use them, guys. Don't just sit there on one frequency. We'll jump around on different bands and different frequencies and let it be heard. Let's go back to the group here. Anybody with comments or information? And I don't know the check-in order, but I did hear Bennett out there earlier in the evening. Is Bennett still around? KO2OK. You have any comments, Bennett?
K2BAR. KO2OK. Hi, Tony. Maybe just one or two. No call. I have an MFJ-259, not a B. So I have something I think is the same model as what you have. My switch is kind of intermittent, and I sometimes get half a display when I turn it on, and I turn it off, turn it on a couple of times, and it works okay. So if you need something to compare to, I have the a 259, not the B version. And the console, Noel, I can't remember. Did you get the documentation for it? I had a documentation for a lot of that equipment, and I think I had it for the console. If not, I can try and locate it, but I just can't remember. You can let me know. And I guess that's about it. Hopefully everybody's living through the water and the rain we have today. Back to net.
Noel, you want to answer Bennett's questions? Did you get the documentation? Maybe you know we'll be back shortly. He's will find something else. Anybody else with comments or questions before we progress? Next was next in line, but was Ron, were you out there with a comment or information? AC2TVD, Ron, were you on frequency? I'm not sure. I didn't run a list, but I thought I heard you.
KC2SQV was
and KC2SQV, come on back. That's I keep getting mixed up. I think that's James or is it John? I will never get it right.
Tony, at this point, you can call me whatever you want. It is James, though. My father will be back at net control momentarily. Things in my house are back to status quo, which is normal chaos. So, he'll be relieved of duty, and we appreciate the temporary relief. The K2BAR, KC2SQV, back to them.
Any relationship to the rainy weather or the wind or batteries exploding? Can you just give us a clue?
If I could only tell you on air. No, nothing to that. Maybe, perhaps off air, my father will share with you the glim details of what just transpired. No, the good news is nothing to do with the weather. We have power and all that, so that's the good news. We're very fortunate with that most of the time. Of course, I just jinx perhaps that, but who knows. Back to that.
John, well, next time we run into Gordon, we'll talk to him. I'm just stretching it out here, but anybody else with any questions or comments or information? I guess I could throw out some information in that the next PARA meeting is not until April the 3rd. That's not the April Fool's Day. That's 2 days after April Fool's Day. And by the way, generally the QST magazine that comes down for the April issue has at least one April Fool's article. Sometimes more than one. Sometimes I think we should discuss the April Fool's article when it appears at one of our nets, perhaps next net. Look for it. It's usually obvious to some and completely not obvious to others. You know, things like antenna wax, you know, or Maybe Jim Joyce could come up with a couple of these things that you've seen in the QSTs. Jim, just to drag it out, you got any remembrance of what QST may have put on as an April Fool's article?
There's not a couple one. I think that the one that was the characteristic was Power Aplenty for Nothing, where they talked about the coaxial line that tapered down. It was the analogy of water in a pipeline, and as you made the pipeline smaller, the water squirted out faster, so that the RF would squirt out faster, and you'd get more signal out. So you started off with coax that was real fat, and then you tapered down the real thin stuff. Remember that one?
I don't remember that one, but Chad thinks that would work.
There were a whole bunch of people who wanted to try. The other classic one that they did, if you remember, was the ad for the new equipment boxes, original equipment boxes. They put an ad in the back of the magazine for somebody selling the boxes that your equipment comes in, and it was all these things. It was listed all of the equipment, like for the last 30 years, and that they had the new boxes for sale for people to buy, and they were inundated with phone calls. Okay, back to that.
Okay. it would be a nice item to manufacture if you could find a couple of things that you could duplicate. I can think of some of the original Kenwood Trio boxes that probably would be easy to duplicate that you don't see anymore. It's about as far back as I go. I never saw a Collins box, but I guess they were wooden crates with military markings on him. Where is that, Gordon? Are you back yet, Gordon?
K2BAR, KC2S, give me, he's not back yet. I know I would hear when he would be back. He's walking up the stairs. We're actually on the same floor most of the time when we operate. But I would like to pose a question, if I may, Tony.
Would welcome a question. Go ahead.
Well, my, I became a proud owner recently of a Asden PCS 6000H, courtesy of my father. I'm getting ready to get it all set up, and at this point I'd like to know what would be an ideal antenna setup and any other thoughts on this particular model, accident.
Really, no, that model is strictly a one-band VHF 2-meter radio?
Yes. Yeah, it's only really for 2 meters, and it's just, and that's that.
Okay, well, that shouldn't be too hard to decide on. You just need a good 2-meter antenna. And whether, and I think it's just an FM radio, right? You don't have any multiband on that, so just a vertical antenna that'll cover the repeaters that you want to cover in the area. From your location, you should be able to use any vertical at a 30 or 40 foot height or top of the chimney, and the coaxial cable that isn't too long a run of any quality will work. If you have a very long run, then you look for some things like 9913 or low loss cable. But for FM and for repeater use, you don't need to spend a lot of money on cables or a lot of money on antennas. You can buy a Diamond, or you can get a Ringo Ranger, a used Ringo Ranger, or we'll make a 2-meter vertical out of coat hangers, and it would work pretty nicely in this area for repeater use.
Thank you very much, Tony, and keep that in mind when I go forward. I think it's suffice to say that he's not coming, even though he said he would. Usually if he says coming, you know, it's been about 5-10 minutes, he would have come back by now. Of course, saying that, if he closed up, he would show up, but that's just my thought. Thank you for the info, and I just want to see if there's anything unique to this, because I hadn't even been around my father's radios all these years, and a short time as a ham myself, I hadn't even seen something like this, so I wanted to see how to proceed. But fair enough. K2BAR.
It should be a fairly obvious radios to operate, but if you really want to, you might look for a operating guide on the internet. Somebody might have a download of a PDF format of operating guide for radio like that, but it shouldn't be necessary. You should be able to work it. The other thing is you probably would want something like in the order of a 20-amp power supply. If it's a 50-amp radio, if it turns out to be only a 10 or 12-watt radio, you can operate with a 10-amp power supply or a 15-amp power supply. So make sure you have adequate DC. And the best way to tell that is if you could monitor the line voltage of the at the actual radio and key it with full power and see if the line voltage drops. If your 12 volts drops down to 11 or 10 or something like that, then you know you're drawing too much current for the power supply, and you're going to develop hum and maybe even motorboating. So I would start with a 20 amp power supply regardless.
Very good. I'll keep that in mind. I've written this down as I go. Okay, thank you very much, Tony. Back to that.
Well, we've been around a couple times, and I've been trying to drag it out. Is there anybody with any comments or information for this 2-meter net? What do we call it, a tech net? Not very technical tonight. Anybody with any further comments or questions? If not, we can wrap it up. Come on back with anybody with anything.
KO2, okay.
Hey, go ahead, Bennett. I also heard somebody doubled with you, so let's pick up Ben first.
Tony, I'm playing with an SB220, and it seems to have a blown 200-volt a transient suppressor, and I wondered if you might have any. I know you have lots of parts. Back to net.
Repeat that. You said a 200-volt suppressor. Is that what you said? That's right. Not a 200-watt suppressor now. Where is this suppressor? It's part of a soft start kit. Okay, and is that a variable resistor that starts cold and warms up to 200 volts? Will handle full power when it gets hot?
I believe so.
Okay, no, I don't have anything like that, but our other parts man on frequency, do you have anything like that, Jim? They used to call them vary something or others? Variable resistors or... Jim, do you know what he's talking about? Do you think you have anything around?
I'm not sure what he's... are you talking about the thermistor that changes, or are you just talking about the surge suppressor?
Well, the way it's described in the kit, from the Harbach kit, is 200-volt ZNR transient suppressor. That's all I have on it.
Okay. Well, that has nothing to do with the step start. That's just they added a transient suppressor because Heath didn't put one there. And, of course, it's a good idea to have one. You don't need that to make the step start circuit work. You're telling me the transient suppressor is blown?
Yes. Well, yeah, looks like it's blown.
Okay. They're usually rated for a voltage and a current. It's around colored red with two leads coming off it?
Well, this one's round with black, and it has a number on it. It's described as a 200-volt. Well, I already described it, and it's got a number on it. The number on it is V14201. So, and they're described as a transient suppressor.
Okay, and what's the amp being run on? What voltage?
220.
Well, I think that may be a problem if it's a 200-volt rated unit. if you run it on 115, you use a 200 unit, and if you run it on 220, you use like a 300-volt unit.
Well, there's one of these to each leg of the 220 circuit. To ground.
Okay, so they're each side to ground. Okay, that makes sense. You know it's blown because it's burned out, right?
Yes, physically it looks like it's burned out.
All right, let me look. The answer is yes, I do have them. Whether I can find it for you or not, but I'll have to give you two. One to put on each leg.
That's fine, appreciate it. And then there's one that goes across. That's a 390-volt transient suppressor, and that seems to be okay, at least physically.
I remember the circuit that has it. Okay. So either side to ground, and then, of course, the big one across it. Yeah. All righty. That should work. I think I have some that are like 200 or something like that are like the size of a nickel with two leads coming off of them or something like that, maybe a quarter size.
Okay, I think these are about dime size, if we're talking money-wise.
Okay, I know I have them. I've said this many times. I just have to find them.
Okay, very good. I appreciate it, Jim, if you can take a look. Anyway, just going through this amplifier, I think you've got some things mixed up here. I think he did a bunch of these modifications, and when he got it all done, it didn't work. I think he's got some wiring wrong on the soft start circuit board to the both the load side and the supply side. All right, back to that. Thanks for watching.
Just had a technical discussion, guys. How about that? Anybody else with comments or questions or technical discussions? W2JK. I think Johnny down again. Go ahead.
I just got an email from my friend John K-L-N-H up in New Hampshire. He's one of these people that's into the low-frequency stuff. He's got a special license. He's WD2 X-Ray Sierra Hotel, /38. It's about 30. There's a whole group of stations in there, all /1, /2, and he's up to /38. And this group that's experimenting on the 600-meter band. And he was just saying that the FCC has added 461 to 478 kilohertz to the experimental frequencies. And he's moved his beacon to 469.0 kilohertz. And he's going to be having that on the air. Well, he had it on the air this evening. I didn't hear it. And also he's going to probably run it on from 9 to 11 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. So anybody's interested in listening to that kind of thing, I've never heard his beacons on that frequency, but he's had some excellent results with it for people that have had the good antennas that are necessary, which I really don't have here. But I thought that if anybody was interested in that kind of stuff, it would might be of interest. Back to that, W2JK.
And what is below the broadcast band, 550 is the broadcast band, so 461 is below the broadcast band. I don't know that any of our current radios dial that low, like the 756 or... Of course, the Collins could, I guess he's just sending a beacon at this point. Experimenting with those lower frequencies, you need longer antennas to get good results. Any other comments or questions?
KC2WIE.
Good evening, KC2WIE. Is K2AMI or... the K2BAR net. Come on back. Have a question or a comment?
Yes, I do. After a 35-year absence, I'm retired. I have a renewed interest in radio. And the question is there, you know, for the tube transistor era of radio, is there a central source where I can obtain a schematic and wiring diagrams? Years ago, there was Sam's PhotoFax. Is there anything like that today? Back to you.
Exactly. What is this a receiver or a transceiver? Just what is it? Because there are there is a website called boatanchors.com, and they may have schematic diagrams for lots of the older radios. If you just type in that model number, you may be able to one of the URLs that has information that you're looking for. What is the actual purpose of that item?
I was thinking about an entry level project for me, I have this place in the Poconos, and buried in the attic someplace there's this old AM radio that I'd like to try to bring back to life. Back to you.
Okay. This AM radio is transistor type, you say. If it's a brand name and a model number, you might just find it. Remember that name, boatanchors.com, and search that. There might be somebody there that has information for it.
Okay, thanks a lot. KC2WIE, standing by, listening.
2JEK with a comment.
Hey, Don's got some information. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a group of, I don't know whether this is a ham radio equipment or is this just a broadcast receiver. I'd like to know that first.
Broadcast receiver, and I don't remember the make or model, but it's a tabletop, probably five tube radio.
Yeah, okay. It used to be what they called the AC-DC 512. Had a bunch of 12-something, 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 a 35 Z5 rectifier and a 50 L6, and that's a fairly common one. And I had a number of those, they're fairly common radios. Probably you'd find that the filter capacitor probably had to have to be replaced, or you'd have to bring it up slowly with a variac, depending on the capacitor. There is a group called the New Jersey Antique Radio Club that is into antique radios and stuff like that. NJARC.org on the website, and they get into that kind of stuff of old antique radios. Maybe they would be able to help us some help to you also. W2JEK back to net.
KC2WIE, thanks again. KC2WIE, clear and listening.
Okay, I think we've kind of run out of string tonight, guys. Keep in mind the Bergen and KC2WIE, if you're interested to hook up with our group here, we have a kick night on Tuesday nights in the Westwood High School, which is actually in Washington Township. It's the same location where we have our hamfest and our auctions. If you're in the area and can come down at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night, you might pick up some technical advice on the spot right there when you do have a chance to bring the radio in. So keep in mind, we do have continuing kit nights now. I don't think there's any interruptions between now and the next fire meeting. There is a of course, the 10-meter net on Monday nights, along with the girls' net you can listen in on, the Barrow Babes net that comes on before the 10-meter net. Noel has a net at 9 o'clock on Wednesday nights. Ben, when he's feeling well, has a net at 8:30 on Thursday nights, and this technical net at 9 o'clock. And if you can't keep track of all of those, go to the Barrow website, www.barrow.org, and find out the information there. Okay, we're going to turn the net back. We're going to close the net now and say 73s to all, and hopefully Gordon will be here next week, same time, same station. And again, keep your batteries charged, your flashlights charged. Look for a portable antenna that you can mount on a fiberglass roof. Hi, how about that? In case the Red Cross has vehicles, but they have fiberglass roofs, so we have a problem here sometimes getting a signal out of a Red Cross vehicle. And this is K2 AMI for the K2B AirNet saying the net is going to be closed and the frequency is open for anybody who wants to use it.
KC2SQP disconnected.